Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, our last podcast pre-draft. Finally, it's here. It's season six. It's episode 104. He's Dave Bryan of Steelers Depot, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers info. And I'm David Todd of the Steelers Radio Network and ESPN Pittsburgh. Dave, a surprising lot to get to since we last spoke on Friday. And we gave our thoughts on things going on around the NFL, but there's been a lot to happen in the last four or five hours. And then, of course, we had the Mike Tomlin, Kevin Colbert press conference today. And as we spoke on Friday, not a ton of information. That kind of every year it's the same general questions. But, you know, there's some stuff to parse and talk about there. Obviously, the Brady stuff, the Bradford stuff. You want to start with the stuff away from the Steelers and get to the Steelers in the meat of the thing, or you want to start with the Steelers and get back to the other stuff?
Yeah, let's start with the Steelers stuff while it's fresh on my mind. We're still trying to parse that for articles on Steelers Depot. A lot of that will be available here after we get done recording this. But let's start with what they didn't say and you know, kind of go into the news about Tom Brady and Sam Bradford and everything else from there.
Okay, two things stood out to me. One is they get, you know, draft history. And, you know, it's a question we talk about. And look, if you don't, you know, if you should look at history. There are trends and we try to figure things out. Do the Steelers purposely not draft corners because they don't value the position? It's something we've talked a lot about, Dave, you and I. And Kevin's comment was essentially, no, that's not the case. We take the guys on the board that we think are best. He said there's certainly not been a history. The Steelers obviously haven't drafted a corner since 1997. He said also before he was there, there was a history of not drafting corners at the top of the draft. But he said that's not a plan. Now, whether you want to believe him or not, that's a whole different thing. But he said it's not a plan. We go in, we draft, you know, we have our board set. And they made it very clear that there is not a lot going on in the war room as the draft is going on. The only anxiety, he said, or Mike said, or Kevin said, is whether they're going to trade up or trade down. But when they go in, they know what their board is, and they're going to be only 24 guys taken ahead of them. And so that means they know if the top 25 guys on their board, they're going to get one of the top 25 guys on their board.
Yeah, when, you know, we've talked a lot about the draft history, especially when it comes to the cornerback position. And I believe Kevin, and there's a lot of things that go into the draft history when you're talking about the cornerback position. A, it starts with where they normally pick. And what did he say? They average picked what? 23 since he's took over in 2000. So, you know, logic tells you that, you know, your top two or three cornerbacks are probably going to be off the board by that time. So, you know, there's probably going to be, I forget what he said specifically when he was asked about the drop off at a certain position, namely cornerback. But I mean, that would play a lot into, you know, the fourth or fifth best cornerback in the draft class not being the best available,
not being their 23rd best player.
Exactly. And also, you know, a thing that I tracked that I found quite interesting, but it also plays into where the Steelers have picked since Colbert has been around, is the fact that all of the cornerbacks that they have drafted with those players, you know, entering the draft as seniors. Now, once again, logic would tell you, well, there's only so many good top-rated underclassmen cornerbacks, and then obviously if you don't get one in the first round, odds are that you're probably not going to draft an underclassman cornerback as the draft rolls on, so to speak. So,
right. And just for those who might not understand the logic there, is guys who come out as underclassmen are elite players. And you would assume that the elite guys are going to go in the first 50 picks. You know, when you look at the, you know, Kuiper's draft board, what it was a year ago today for this year, and then what it is when all the underclassmen have announced their intention, you know, half the first round picks are now underclassmen guys. So you're not going to, you know, it's rare that you would say, you look at a guy's potential and say he's going to be a really good player and he's going to be around in the fourth round.
Yeah, and like I said, I think when I was posing those questions I would ask to you in the last show, David, while I know we wouldn't get an answer probably worth writing about, it would be fun to see Kevin Colbert asked about that specifically and force him to give an answer. Such as,
remind me the question specifically that you mean.
Just about, you know, since his time in Pittsburgh, the Steelers have only drafted senior cornerbacks.
Yeah, talking about class, right.
Right. So while I'm pretty sure what I think the answer would be to such a question, which we kind of already gave one ourselves, it would be interesting to hear it come out of his mouth as it relates to that. Now, with that said, here we are in this year's draft. The Steelers select 25th overall. You know, I think, and I've said this several times, even though I'm not going to mock a cornerback to the Steelers, if they were to draft a cornerback 25th overall this year, for several reasons, scheme, ability, yada, yada, I think that player would be William Jackson III. But I'm not convinced William Jackson III is going to be on the board when the Steelers pick 25th overall.
I'll, just because I said it in January, I'll stick with Mackenzie Alexander. But, you know, look, if they take – look, let's be very clear about a couple things. You know, we talk about the Steelers a lot. Dave or I would never be so brazen or asinine to suggest we know, you know, half of what Kevin Colbert and Mike Tomlin do in these player evaluations. We do the best we can in, you know, sussing out. We have opinions. Sometimes our opinions are right. Sometimes they're wrong. Of those three guys, Dave, you know, the appeal, obviously, of Jackson and Apple is they're just a little bit bigger, is one thing. Kevin talked about stats being not meaningless, but basically both of them said you watch the tape because the tape reveals why the stats are the stats. Maybe they were thrown at. Maybe they weren't. Maybe it was schematic. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe they dropped balls. Maybe they didn't. You know, all these things we know. And then you just look at it and see how good an athlete guys are. And I loved what he said about watching tape, Dave. And I know you subscribe to this 100%. One of my favorite line of the whole press conference was Kevin said, you know, the video is most of it. He said, then, you know, the combine and the pro days, they're important, but they're just ancillary parts. You know, I think getting to know the player and understanding his personality is the important part of the pro day and the visits that the players have here. But he said, when good players work out good, great. When bad players work out good, be careful. And when good players work out bad, don't kill them. I love that.
Yeah, and if you go back to last year's post-draft press conference, they talked about tangible evidence. You know, how many times did we hear that buzz phrase thrown around? Now, in defense of a guy like Mackenzie Alexander, who didn't record an interception in his 2 years at Clemson, he wasn't thrown at a lot. And Kevin kind of, you know, talked briefly. He didn't talk specifically about Alexander, of course, because they never talk about specific players, but you know, some teams just might not throw at a guy. And obviously, if you're not thrown at, you're not going to get the opportunity to record, you know, pass breakups or interceptions. But then on the flip side, you look at guys that were thrown at, you have a lot of tangible evidence. A guy like William Jackson III had, what, 5 interceptions last year. 3 of them, of course, came in the bowl game against Florida State. He also led the NCAA in pass breakups last year. That's a lot of tangible evidence, as Colbert and Tomlin like to say. And you're right. I would like to know 1/8 of what, you know, goes in, what they have as evaluations on.
Well,
what
we both
on
love
players
is to have sit for an hour and just let them talk about what they see on tape. Just let the tape roll and have them talk out loud about what they're seeing.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm more of a defensive guy, David, more than anything else. I consider myself more of a defensive-minded guy, and I've talked several times over the years, boy, how fun would it be to be locked in a room for 30 minutes to an hour with a guy like Dick LeBeau, you know, just to hear, you know, schematics and everything that goes into, you know, preparing a game plan and stuff like that. We like to think, you know, look, you can now take these courses online and pay $400 or $500 on how to scout players. But, you know, even NFL scouts, in the league, David, what a volatile business that is, right? I mean, you have guys that get in as scouts and then 2 years later, they're working for ESPN, right? You know? That's such a big turnover that even they get it wrong. Even Kevin Colbert today admitted that they're going to make mistakes in the future. He's afraid to admit it, but he knows it's going to happen. Sometimes your best tape study isn't a true indicator of what's actually going to happen with the player. What was the buzzword he said today? Heart and what?
Heart and smart. Smart and heart. Heart and smarts.
Yeah, heart and smarts or something
like
that.
Yeah, hearts and smarts.
Hearts and smarts. So sometimes those types of things, even though you have the Wunderlich and all like that, are tough to are tough to put a measurement on. I mean, why did a guy like Antonio Brown, you know, wind up going in the sixth round? You know, he definitely has hearts and smarts and a great work ethic, and he did not let the stigma of being a six round draft pick stop him. And you know, you could go probably team by team and find players, the Josh Normans, those type of players that fall through the cracks. That, you know, had they known this player would have been this good, they obviously would have drafted him early.
Yeah, you know, evaluating, we talk about guys missing in college and stuff. I mean, look, evaluating 21-year-old men and projecting how money's going to affect them, how their body's going to develop, what their work ethic's going to be like, what their injury profile might look like going forward. I mean, it's not a fool's game, but damn, it's a hard game. And we see it. And, you know, different positions are more difficult. You know, you're probably going to hit a lot more on offensive linemen and defensive linemen because, you know, we hear a lot about the Steelers reteaching defensive lineman technique and offensive lineman technique. The physical build and that kind of thing is probably easier to evaluate in terms of how that's going to develop. Versus a quarterback's mental acuity, understanding game plan, touch, ability to take hits in the pocket, or a safety's ability to play against elite guys and turn his hips and work in a scheme and understand, read and react to receivers differently. So it is incredibly difficult. And it's if you look at this, by the way, just as an aside here, did you see the piece from the Washington Post on the draft?
Absolutely, and I think Matthew Marksi has already written several articles on that as well, too.
I mean, it is a stunning amount of work, and so, you know, get to Steelers Depot and check that. I'm sure Matthew's posted a link to that, but you want the all-time wormhole, you know, rabbit hole to go down. You start taking a look at that, and you kiss your next couple hours goodbye, because for all 32 teams, they go through an extensive evaluation of draft success, and not surprisingly, the teams up top are the teams you would expect, and the Steelers came out number one. Now, it's empirical, but it's still there's, you know, heavy dose of opinion involved in the evaluation. Really, really interesting stuff. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, and how you know, it goes to show you, especially with a team like the Steelers, who have never really been active in free agency as far as going after the high-dollar players, how important the draft, and really the Cincinnati Bengals, you could really say, is a team in the now that, boy, they the emphasis that's put on the draft right now. And if you have two, you know, subpar draft classes, you can instantly – you know, of course, injuries are going to play a lot in a season regardless, but you can really get behind the eight ball in a hurry. And I think maybe with those two things combined, maybe talking about subpar draft classes and injuries, you know, we saw the Steelers end up go 8-8 back-to-back seasons, right?
Yeah, although I've gone through the drafts recently from 2011 forward, and I don't think you'd give them less than a B on any of those. Now, Talking about 8-8, you go back to 10-9. Maybe those are the ones that impacted the 8-8 seasons more. Probably did impact them more because obviously it takes guys a couple of years to be up to full speed and you know where they're going to be peak contributors. So yeah, good point. All right, Dave. So a couple other things that came out of this. Go ahead. Those were the.
I thought that, you know, look, there's been this thing back and forth. It almost seems to be between bloggers and the local media about why the Steelers shouldn't draft a nose tackle. You know, the narrative out there from the local media is how can you draft a player that's only going to play 30% of the snaps, whereas most of the outside bloggers, if you will, have the mentality of, look, if a player can give you snaps that, you know, maybe a guy plays nose tackle that can give you some snaps in the nickel as a pass rusher, well, then that justifies the position. Now, there's not, like any draft, there's not many of those players in this year's draft class, but there are a few of them. And I think Colbert did a good job of saying, look, we're still a base 3-4 team. The nose tackle position still has some relevance and importance. And he also had an addendum on that especially if that player can play in sub-package situations. And that's the main thing I think listeners and readers should have kind of garnered through all the articles that both myself and Alex Kozora have written and talked about throughout this whole pre-draft process. You know, there's not many players that can do that.
Billings could well be one of those.
Yeah, Billings very well could be one of those. I mean, look, he played what? I forget the amount of snaps he played as a whole at Baylor. Now, of course, he did miss like a game and a half or so with an ankle injury, so the percentage of snaps obviously would have been higher. But when you look at, and I think I've already said this several times, I think it was something like 4.5 or 5.5 of his sacks last year came on third downs, you know? This is a guy that's used to staying on the field, on third downs, and has proven that he can get after the passer in those situations. Now, obviously, you're not going to the whole premise of this whole thing, David, it was kind of set off. It kind of stems back to a quote that Cam Hayward had towards I think it was at the end of last season, saying that you know need to find a way to kind of lessen his playing time, him and Stephon Tuitt. And while you're obviously not going to want to lessen that playing time a lot, when you look at what the amount of snaps those two played combined compared to other quote unquote defensive tackles in the league, it was right there at the top of the league. And you know, I have
defensive ends, right?
Well, no, I'm talking about defensive tackles because technically you would have to include outside linebackers in those studies as well, too, right?
Okay, so you say the first part again one more time.
Okay, if you were to look at Cameron Hayward and
Tuitt
and Stephon Tuitt more as if they were defensive tackles in a 4-3.
Okay.
Because if you and my study did not include outside linebackers, but I made sure to point out the fact that a defensive end in a 4-3 is realistically an outside linebacker in a 3-4, right?
Yep.
Okay. Whereas a defensive tackle in a 4-3 can be more closely related to a defensive end in the Steelers 3-4, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yes, I get it.
Okay, so, but even if you look at the stat breakdown that I did that only compared defensive linemen as a whole league-wide, I think they were top five. If you took the top two players, the top two snap getters on each team's defensive line and stacked them up overall, I believe Tuitt and Hayward came in fifth overall in total overall snaps. But once again, I caution you that some of those teams ahead of the Steelers, those were actually 4-3 defensive ends figured into that study. So it's a little lopsided there, but I think people got my point overall. Ideally, you would probably like to lower Tuitt and Hayward snaps by about 10 to 15% each. Would you agree?
Yep.
And that's the, you know, I that's the whole premise of getting back to kind of one of the things that Alex Cazora has hit on, was that you could theoretically come up with, assuming you had the right player that could play both nose tackle and help you out in your sub package defense, you know, as a pass rusher, that you could get that said player in the neighborhood of 50 to 60% of the snaps.
Yeah, that, no, that, you know, just very simply, look, if the guy can play nose tackle 30% and, you know, take 10% of Hayward and Tuitt snaps, there's 50, you know, 50%. So, yeah, I mean, that's straightforward stuff. No problem, no argument with that.
And that's been the whole premise of what people will consider, well, your guy's narrative is just to get a guy you like in Billings. That's not what it is. It's just the premise of they need to get some help on that defensive line to help alleviate some snaps off of Tuitt and Hayward. And, you know, whether or not that guy's a defensive, you know, kind of a bigger defensive tackle who might could give you some snaps at nose tackle. You know, maybe it's a guy like Daniel McCullers. But here's the thing with Daniel McCullers. You go back and look at the sub-package snaps he was allowed to play last year, and you look at the meaningful snaps included in those snaps, there weren't many of them, David. And I think Tomlin said pretty much late last season that, you know, they would get Tuitt and Hayward off the field more if they had more confidence in players on their roster to do that. And it's obvious that they don't. McCullers, I'm still not convinced he's the future of this franchise as a nose tackle.
Let me co-sign that with an exclamation point. He's not.
And I'm still not convinced that regardless of what happens in this draft, you're going to see him play a lot of sub-package football on top of it. And sure they brought in a guy like Matthews, Ricardo Matthews, but overall, I mean, this guy is what he is. How many snaps can you really expect out of him? A lot of people listening to this podcast will probably say, well, what about LT Walton and Keshad Lyons? Let's be honest with you, with each other. We don't really know who those players are, and it's obvious that the Steelers weren't confident enough A, to get Keshad Lyons on the field last year, and B, LT Walton didn't play many of any snaps, and in the game that he did see snaps in against the Chiefs, it was a mess. So that's been our premise of why at some point, maybe in this first three rounds of this draft, the Steelers need to find a player that could potentially play, and more specifically now that the team hasn't re-signed, you know, let Steve McClendon go. What's going to happen at that nose this year? We'll know at the end of this week. If they draft a true kind of a bigger bodied guy to play the nose, well, we know right away Daniel McCullers is not the future of this team.
Let's get into some more of what they talked about at the presser. What other topics stuck out to you?
I thought Colbert talking about injured players, and you know, it was all about Carl Joseph.
Carl Joseph and Jalen, you know, Jalen Smith in a bigger picture way, yep.
Right, about, you know, basically, you know, what goes into evaluating players that aren't going to be able to run and work out for you. And I don't think it was any mystery the response that we got from Colbert is you have to rely on what you see on tape with the player. And it's going to be the Steelers could very well wind up having a very interesting choice at 25th overall. Imagine if a guy like Billings and a guy like Carl Joseph are still on the board there. And let's throw in William Jackson III to make it really, really interesting. You know, what are you going to do at that point? Now, Carl Joseph, if this knee wasn't even an issue, David, there's a chance he's not even on the board at 25 overall, right?
I saw a mock from somebody, I don't know if it was Dane or – I saw a mock from a guy who I think has a reasonable handle on things who had him going like 21, or maybe it was, you know what it was? It was the Kiper McShay mock together. They had him going before the Steelers picked.
And it's so hard not knowing the medicals to say where this guy is going to go. And obviously, if we weren't talking about the medicals, I don't think there's a one of us that you know, listening to this, that wouldn't think that he would be off the board at by pick 25. But now that we have the medicals in there, it's the stuff that we don't know related to health that makes it so hard to project where he ultimately goes to. When healthy, this guy has amazing tape, David. I don't know how far you've gone back with him. And you know what I was going to ask you, too? I was hoping maybe you could lob off a call before Thursday's draft. Who was the guy that sat in with you on the radio, went to West Virginia as a defensive coordinator
Tom Bradley.
Tom Bradley. If anybody would know that player, it's Tom Bradley, right?
Yeah.
You know, why don't you see if you can lob off a call to him? Where is he at, by the way, right now?
UCLA's D.C.
That's right. Now, obviously, I don't know how accessible he would be to you at this point. But
he's accessible to me.
well, you know, that would be a great get for your show, right? You know, in my opinion, to get his thoughts on Carl Joseph. You know,
it'd be off the record type stuff, I'm sure. And he's been away for a year, so I don't know if he'll know his medicals, but I'm sure he's going to. You know, Miles Jack is another guy, and that's a guy he has. Where you say, you know, the medical, Miles Jack isn't, it's not an issue of current injury. It's the question of, will that knee hold up long term? And it's the same type of thing.
Right. And I understand, too. I mean, I'm just throwing out there what
it's a good idea. I'm going to text him.
Right. But, and I also understand that he'll probably be limited, you know, with how much he must hold his tongue talking about any player, you know, being as how he's back on the inside again. But, boy, I mean, you go back and you look at Carl Joseph's tape, and the thing with him is there was a lot of it before he went down injured. So you've got a lot of tape to evaluate this kid. And as Colbert kind of said in so many words, you have to put trust in not only what you see in tape, but what your doctors are telling us as well. The Steelers obviously have a great handle on that by now. They were at Carl Joseph's pro day. They brought Carl Joseph in for a pre-draft visit. I'm sure, however the medical rechecks wind up going in Indianapolis, they had someone there or the shared information or one. They know whether or not that knee is going to be an issue. Now, Carl Joseph himself said at his pro day that he expects to be ready by training camp. However, there was a report, and read into it what you will. I think it was by Jason Lockenfora that one NFL, I think it was exec, even said, you know, there's a possibility that he could possibly missed the first, say, 4 weeks of the season. I think Kevin maybe even kind of hinted, not specifically at Carl Joseph, obviously, but saying that you have to factor in what if this guy has to start off on PUP. The thing with taking Carl Joseph in the first round is you're also comes with that is the ability to have a fifth-year option on a guy. So while you might miss having him for the first, let's say, six weeks.
Yeah.
Of his rookie season, boy, you still got a lot of time to have him after that.
And the other question is, 100% healthy, is he starting the first week, 6 weeks of the season anyway?
That's a great point, and I think I brought that up in one of my articles as well, too. Even if we were talking about 100% healthy Carl Joseph here in relation to the Steelers, what are the chances of him getting on that field during the first 4 weeks of the season?
In front of Robert Gold.
Right. And probably not great, right?
Yeah, I would say unlikely.
All right, so if you went into this thing and your doctors told you, man, his knee is right on schedule after he gets one full year removed from this injury, which will technically be right about, what, 6 weeks into the season, there should be no issues with this kid whatsoever. This should be the Carl Joseph that you saw on tape. If that's the case, and I'm the doctor telling you that, Kevin Colbert Todd, are you running up to the podium with Carl Joseph pick in your hand?
I am not picking him because of it. So if he's that guy on my board, yes. Now I don't know where he is on the Steelers board versus, and I liked the comparison you said, Joseph Jackson. You know, throw all three corners in. And, you know, we should probably do this on this podcast, so you should be thinking about this. You know, we should probably have our list out there. How many names do you need today to list the Steelers' first-round pick with a high level of certainty? Think you can do it with six names? I mean, because you just named, we can name five. We can, and if you want to throw Artie Burns in, you know, if you think he's in the mix, then that you got four corners. You got Billings. You got Joseph. And then, you know, you probably, I'd probably add two, maybe three names and think with a high degree of certainty I'd have them. I wouldn't cross any of those names off the list, though. I don't think I could do it. I don't think I can do it in less than seven or eight.
I would attempt to throw out there right now, I think the pick will be Billings, Joseph, or William Jackson III.
So that also means you think for sure that one of those three guys will be on the board.
Yes.
Hmm. I think Billings will be probably on the board.
You know what scares me the most about Billings is three teams almost right in front of the Steelers. The Redskins, the Vikings, and the Bengals.
Well, yeah, I've gone on record here. You heard me last week as saying I put a decent amount of money that the three teams right in front of the Steelers, the Texans, the Vikings, and the Bengals all go wide receiver.
I would bet against that.
Right. If I had that or the other option, I would bet against it too. Okay. What if I said two of the three will go wide receiver?
You could twist my arm into that and putting some shekels down, as you like to say. but even so, I mean, when you look at stacking the board and you look at the top receivers in this draft, yeah, you know, and you think how maybe one or two of those top receivers could be off the board, I would still probably, I don't know, it would be tough. One, you could definitely twist my arm. Two, you could probably, you know, a couple cups of coffee might be able to talk me into it. But three, I doubt it. But, I mean, back to Billings. He would be a fit with the Redskins, with the Vikings, and with the Bengals. And there's this rumor, and take it out, take it for what it is. It's a rumor. It's been floating around on Twitter for a while. The Vikings, in so many words, told Billings that he would be the pick if he's still on the board.
Huh.
And it's hard to imagine an organization telling a player that, but I don't doubt that it hasn't happened, if that makes sense. But that's my biggest fear about Billings sliding. I think William Jackson has a great possibility of being the third corner off the board, so I'm worried about him being available. I think with Joseph and the injury, I think he stands the best chance of being on the board. You like Lewis Riddick, right, David?
I like Lewis Riddick a lot.
I do too. I really value his opinion, what he has to say. Here's what he had to say about Carl Joseph in his one and only mock that he did a few days ago that was broadcast, I think, on Facebook. I had the link of that up on Steelers Depot. Here's what he said about, and he mocked Joseph to Riddick, and he says they, being the Steelers, really
wait,
need to
sorry,
address.
He mocked Joseph to Riddick.
He mocked Joseph to the Steelers.
Gotcha.
Okay, at 25 overall. And here's what he said. He says, they, the Steelers, really need to address their secondary. They need to address it at corner and safety. This is my favorite player of all defensive players in this draft, Carl Joseph. Now, he's coming off an ACL, but I'll tell you this. As far as what you ask safeties to do in the National Football League, cover, tackle, make adjustments, make plays on the ball, there's nothing that this kid can't do. The only reason why right now he's not being talked about is, one, because he's hurt. I get it, but he's going to be fine. His combine recheck, from everything that I hear, was great. This kid can do it all. 5'9", 205 pounds, between 205 and 210 pounds, runs in the mid-4.5s. If he's healthy, he will be one of the better safeties in the league. I guarantee it.
Is the Bob Sanders comparison apt or not in your opinion?
Man, been so long since I've seen Bob Sanders play. Yeah, but you know who he really gets the comparisons to? Earl Thomas.
Oh, I mean, yeah, Earl Thomas bigger, but okay.
You know, so that's
Earl Thomas, 6'6", 6'6",
Earl Thomas ain't that big, right?
I thought he was 6 foot.
Keep talking.
Okay. Well, when I put together my list, Dave, I don't think I can do it. I if we were betting a steak dinner and neither of us have to announce how many guys we put on the list beforehand, but you have to have the guy on the list, I'm going to be well above three thinking. And by the way, everybody, you need to send in your picks.
I'll have that form up in the next day or so for them to do it.
And are we going to limit it to 40, or they can pick as many or few as they want?
No, I have to make this easy on me. You don't have to grade it. It's going to be like last year. They have to get all 31 picks within 40 selections.
Okay, and, you know, toward the back end, rank your selections, because if you get it by your 37th pick, that if it's a tie for the winner, if somebody actually does it. And by the way, I've been on record as saying nobody can do this. I said it last year. I think Dave disagreed with me. Nobody did it. And because, you know, at 25, Shaq, whatever his name is, went off the board to Carolina, Shaq Richardson, and Philip Dorsett went. There were some, you know, some questionable picks that people just didn't have guys maybe in the top 50 went in the first round. Frederick in Dallas from Wisconsin a couple of years ago, who's been a great player, went, he was a third round projection, went at 17 or whatever Dallas picked that year. I will stand on it again. Nobody will be able to do this, but make sure you rank your last 10 players in order. I don't care about the top 30. Just make sure your last 10 are ranked in order you think most likely to least likely, and that'll be the tiebreaker.
All right, that sounds good. Earl Thomas, 5'10 and a quarter, 208 pounds at the combine.
That's almost spot on.
Almost spot on to what Joseph is.
Yeah.
What was Joseph?
5'9", 208 or something.
I've got that right here. What Lewis Riddick said. Hold on here.
Got him by an inch.
Where are you, Carl Joseph? 509 and a half, 205.
Okay, so you got him by 5 pounds and 3/4 of an inch.
There you go. I think it's obvious that Carl Joseph would not last all the way around to Steelers' second pick, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I don't. I'll be shocked if any of the guys we've been talking about are there at 46, let alone at which Steelers are picking at 53 or something.
Because of everything I said, I'm leaning more towards Carl Joseph being the pick, because I don't think something tells me Billings is going to be off the board.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get some more of the press.
Let me ask you real quick. If let's say all the corners that we talked about are off the board, and it comes down to Joseph or Billings. Who are you taking?
Well, I think you might have talked me into Joseph. I probably before the podcast would have said Billings, but you might have talked me into Joseph.
I would be pretty influential in the draft room, right?
Yes, absolutely. In my draft room, at least.
I wouldn't have to get up on the table, right?
Yeah.
All right, proceed. What else stuck out to you today?
I've been banging the drum for Bruce Gradkowski, and Kevin Colbert gave him an endorsement, but about as soft an endorsement as you can give, saying that he worked out for us satisfactorily. And that didn't roll off the tongue for Kevin today. My feeling, Dave, he's cheap, he's local, he's agile. If his arm is good, then he's your guy. So
Let me throw this scenario out here. One, I think a follower on Twitter, pending all this news the last couple of days with Foles and now Sam Bradford. What if the Rams were willing to part with Nick Foles for a 6th-round draft pick? And his salary, his base salary in 2016, I think, is $1.8 million. Now, they've already paid him a heck of a roster bonus. So they have a lot already invested. Nothing says that, Nick Foles will be traded. But what if you could acquire Nick Foles for a 6th-round draft pick? Would that be anything you'd be interested in?
I got a couple answers directly to that. Apparently some teams are interested in Nick Foles, and I buy completely what one of the Pro Football Focus guys, whether you like it or not, some of those guys are smart guys and they're interesting follows. What he said is there are probably 8 or 10 developmental prospects in this draft that are probably more interesting than the Nick Foles reclamation project. And I'll go exactly with that. If I were giving up the sixth, I'd rather take a shot on, you know, one of the crazy quarterbacks in the draft.
Now, I'm assuming the Rams have already paid that $6 million roster bonus. Obviously, if that roster bonus is associated with him making the 53, that's something you don't do. $1.75 million base salary in 2016. Here's the bad part of it. His 2017 salary is $10.75 million. So, obviously, if you're trading for him, it would be a one-year rental. And
I'd rather have the pick.
Right. And I'm not so interested in a 1 year rental as far as that goes, but it was something that a Twitter follower threw out there today. I think it's going to be Gronkowski. Brian Hoyer's still out there, right?
Yeah, I got to think somebody's going to get a deal done with Hoyer. I still want to stick to the presser, but this is Sam Bradford news. Those who didn't hear it, Sam Bradford's guaranteed $18 million this year. I think overall he's guaranteed $22 million over the next 2 years. Of that $18 million, $11 million this year was a signing bonus. It's $7 million in salary. Bill Barnwell, so they wouldn't clear any cap space this year, and they'd clear $5.5 million next year. I don't know how he comes up with that number. If they trade him, they're going to clear the $7 million in salary for this year. So I think he's wrong on that.
Here's the thing. He's scheduled to have a base salary in 2016 of $7 million that's fully guaranteed.
Right.
Okay? That's it. The Eagles would eat $11 million in dead cap money.
But they clear $7 million, right?
Well,
if they trade him and they don't take any money back.
They clear the salary, but they would have a $11 million, assuming this
yeah.
– assume. Okay,
yeah,
it works out to I think the official thing is if they trade him, they would free up $1.5 million in cap space.
Right, but okay, I'm not sure I get that. Isn't he counting? What's he counting against the cap this year?
12.5.
And if they okay, so it's the structuring of that of the $11 million, right? I get that. Okay, so they clear $1.5 million of cap space. They save $7 million on the salary. So
correct
difference between cap and cash that we get into sometimes. It's pretty straightforward. I think people could follow that. Anyway, so he's on the market, but let me tell you, Dave, and pardon my French, but when guys, I mean, he's a bitch. I mean, come on. You're making $18 million. They signed a guy who's clearly the backup, and they may draft a guy. And so you're not going to go to the workouts because – and they've said you're the starting quarterback. You're not going to go to the workouts and be part of this team earning $18 million because now you're unhappy that they're going to draft a quarterback. Dave, I can't tell you how little patience I have for that. I'm telling you, daylight's out.
I'd send somebody over to help him start packing his boxes.
Well, I might do that too, but I mean, it still annoys the living daylights out of me.
Sure, sure. And obviously, and I think this has already happened, they're going to take the line as, the heart, the stance as an organization of, Sam, better get used to it. He's our starting quarterback. We're sorry he feels that way. And why wouldn't you? You just can't. That's a response you have to have.
Well, what if Denver says, look, you gave a ton up to move up in the draft. What if Denver all of a sudden says, look, you paid the 11, we'll pay the 7, because that's the number they're trying to get to with Kaepernick, trying to get that down to 7. And he's better than Kaepernick, in my opinion. What if Denver says we'll give you a third round pick?
Oh, I'd
in a second,
run
right,
right. And but I don't think they're going to get that. Knowing you have an organization over the
If you're Denver, you don't do that deal.
I try to obviously get it done for less, a fifth.
Okay, but let's say it's 3 or nothing. Would you do it?
Oh,
I'd do
man. No, I wouldn't.
You'd rather have Sanchez or potentially Hoyer.
I'd rather go another
Connor Cook.
I'd rather go another route that didn't give up. I mean, because it's a 1 year rental, right?
You get an option on the second year, right?
Number. He has a $13 million base salary in 2017, and $4 million of that is guaranteed.
Yeah.
He also has a $4 million roster bonus. due in 2017 as well too. So,
you draft Connor Cook at the end of the first round, and he's your guy, and you trade Mark Sanchez.
If you're trading anything more than a fifth round draft pick for Sam Bradford, you're doing so with the idea he's going to be your quarterback for the next 2 years.
Yeah, but I'd still draft one in the first or second round and see what you get. Okay, let me ask you another question. Our buddy Dale Lawley did a mock. Would you do this if you were the Steelers? Denver decides, you know, Paxton Lynch and Connor Cook are both on the board, and Denver decides they got to have one of them. So, and it's the Steelers pick. Would you move back to 31 for a third and a fifth?
I will
give an unequivocal yes to that.
Probably would. I mean, knowing how I – or not knowing, but thinking how I think the board's going to break there – obviously, I'd like a second in there, but I think I could still do damage with another third. I would push to get a third and a fourth.
Well, yeah, but I'm giving you the scenario. I know you're always going to want more or give up less. You know, you always change the terms on me. This is the scenario.
I got to think like a GM, right?
Here's the thing. You know that pick's going to be a quarterback, so that's one less pick you got to worry about. So you're really effectively picking 30th, if you will, because that pick isn't going to affect your – so it's just you're really moving back five picks instead of six picks.
Yeah, I would probably do it.
Yeah, I would do it.
You know, because you're still probably going to get one of the – boy, here's the thing, though, is – yeah, I guess you'd really be gambling that Carl Joseph would be still on the board there, you know. And I think there's a good shot of that happening, you know, of him still being – assuming the Steelers traded down, that Joseph could still be available at, what, 31st overall. But, boy, you'd have to have a list of, like Kevin Colbert says, you'd have to have a list of, what, five or six players that you'd be willing to live with.
Yeah. All right, let's keep moving through what they said today. And we've covered Bradford. I mean, there's not really much to say about Brady. So far, it's been the suspension was upheld for four games. Is it over? I doubt it's over. We'll see what happens. Okay, that's all we need to really say about Brady.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, I'd still be surprised if Tom Brady misses any games. But you know, not knowing enough about the courts and that level and appeals and all like that. We'll see is the best stance to take here.
Okay, so
what do you think about Josh Norman and that whole situation?
I think Josh Norman, for those who haven't heard, there was some kind of new news today about this, that Josh Norman went to Carolina and said, I want to sign the tender. He wanted to stay. And somebody said that Josh Norman didn't really understand what was going on with the tender, what it meant. And his agent kind of told him not to sign it. And so he went to Carolina and said, I'll fire my agent and I'll sign the tender. And obviously Carolina has made that decision at that point in time, decided to move on. So what Norman did is he hired a new agent. He didn't fire his agent, because if you fire your agent, you have to wait 5 days to sign with a new team. Now, I don't know why, you know, I don't know why Josh Norman couldn't wait 5 days, but okay, you got to wait 5 days to sign with a new team. So I hired a co-agent and then signed with the Skins. They put the full court press on, went and picked him up in a jet. You know, basically sent defensive coaches with him. And so he's now a 5 year, $75 million. The deal seems kind of fair to me, Dave. I wouldn't have paid that money. Like you said the other day, he's only done it 1 year. Are you sure that he's an elite player and will be for the next 5 years? But how that all went down. Now it's going to be Josh Norman covering Antonio Brown week one.
Yeah, and here's the thing. In reality, this is a 2-year deal for Norman. Any bets on whether or not he's a Redskin year three of the contract?
Without being a complete wimp, I'll go 50-50.
I'll go less than that. I'll take, if this is a Price is Right showcase, I'm going under. Here's the thing. It probably worked out better for Norman, right? $20 million this year.
Yeah, it definitely worked out better. You know, it's a little disturbing to think that he didn't understand the basics here, because this is as 101 as it gets. You're tagged a franchise. You're going to get paid $14 million. They can do it again to you next year. You don't have to sign it, you know, up until a certain day. Then there's not a lot of explaining to do. So either he's dumb as a rock or something else.
Here's the thing. If he signs that tender, he's pretty much really locked in. You know, there's negotiation that can, of course, take place on both sides. And, of course, the starting point on average per year is going to be the price of the franchise tag. He obviously, him and his agent viewed him as being worth more than that. He obviously got more than that. But the Panthers were going to try to take the hard line and try to pay him $11 million a season on a multi-year deal. So had he signed that contract, he was only going to make, you know, whatever the tag, 11, whatever million was. But it ended up probably, you know, as far as his bank account goes, working out better for him this year and next year.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else from the presser?
I'm trying to think. I'm sure something will pop out as I go back through the recording of this and all. But, you know, overall, we knew going into this we weren't going to learn a lot.
Nobody asked about Cortez. They did ask about Jarvis Jones, and I didn't realize the date was so quick here. The date is like middle of next week to pick up his fifth-year option.
Yeah, and you know,
what's your bet on that?
All I can say is what I would do, and I wouldn't pick it up. I can understand if they do. Now, that of course, is only guaranteed from injury only. Here's the thing. If you pick it up and you decide to cut him prior to the start of the new league year next year, you run the risk of, he'll be a street free agent and you will get nothing in return, no compensatory pick. By not picking up the fifth-year option, you should only pick up the fifth-year option if you have confidence that he's going to be on your team moving forward. If you don't, then you shouldn't pick up the option because they will get nothing as far as a compensatory pick should they have to cut him by the start of the new league year. So I'm bouncing the question back to you. Is he worth picking up the fifth-year option?
No, not at $8 million.
I agree. And I think
see
it is.
See how I answered these definitively?
Well, see, I have to wear multiple hats in these things, David.
All right.
People hold me more responsible for what I say than you.
Well, they can get to you easier.
Yeah, absolutely. They can just climb right on the comment section. You can hang up on them. I wouldn't do it. Plain and simple. Are you surprised that they brought in really only one edge rusher for pre-draft visits? I mean, it all signs point to them not drafting an outside linebacker.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, there's not a roster spot available. I mean, if you think Anthony Ciccolo, if you think Ciccolo is going to be on the team, you know, they cleared Garvin. But, you know, you just think about linebackers, and if you're going to carry nine, you know, you got nine spots taken for. Now, obviously, guys get injured and everything else. But they'll have, you know, I'm sure there'll be some undrafted free agent linebackers. I can't, you know, yes, I agree with what you said. Now, then you get the question of if Noah Spence or Shaq Lawson's there at 25, is that even on their radar?
I think Shaq Lawson obviously would be. Once again, when it comes to a player like Noah Spence, man. The thing about his past, you really better have done your homework as far as the character goes. And I'm sure they have. I'm sure they sent private investigators and all like that. I was a little bit curious that they didn't – a player like that, you would have thought they would have brought him in for a pre-draft visit, right?
I would have, yes.
Now, obviously, maybe they didn't because of the fact that they don't expect him to be on the board. I mean, they didn't bring David DeCastro in for a visit. Not that he had character flags or anything. I think they just didn't expect David DeCastro to be around. Normally, you would expect potential first-round draft picks who are underclassmen to come in for visits. Oh, here's one thing I wanted to say along those lines. I found it a bit surprising that Andrew Billings was not brought in for a pre-draft visit. Because of him, the Steelers have drafted first round players.
Well, did Dupree come in last year? I mean, they had dinner with him and they had dinner with Billings, but I don't think Dupree came in, did he?
Right, but here's my point. He was a senior.
Yeah, I just think, you know, maybe you go down there for the pro day, you have dinner with them, you have those couple hours. Maybe they consider that the equivalent.
Yeah, I just think, kind of history kind of dictates this on top of it. Normally, their first round draft picks who had been underclassmen have come in for visits. I think Rashard Mendenhall was an exception to that rule. And I think David DeCastro obviously was an exception to the rule. I can't think of too many others other than that who were underclassmen that drafted in the first round who didn't come in for visits. I was a bit surprised. Now, look, Billings supposedly has a squeaky clean character. They obviously were all over him at the pro day, and maybe they learned enough there and said, we don't have to bring him in. Or maybe they're of the mindset of, we're going to be wasting the visit here because Billings probably ain't going to be on the board.
Right. Okay, I'm trying to think if anything else stuck out to me in the conversation. Looking at my notes here.
I think
asked about Cortez.
Right. Several of the other questions I had laid out. Yeah, I was hoping they'd ask about Duran Grant in his future. That I don't think that happened either. But plenty of time to ask about that as the offseason progresses.
All right, good stuff.
All right, folks.
Is it worth thinking about doing one of these on Wednesday, or should we just wait till Friday morning?
We can play it. We'll leave it. Play it by ear. If me and you can't get
TBD,
together,
TBD.
Yeah, and we'll maybe try to effort Dave Tay. And once again, folks, I we had Dave Tay. We had a great interview with him, but the Gremlins had their way. That audio got corrupted. Put the blame on me. I apologize on that. I don't know what happened. We'll do our best maybe to try to get Dave T, but I can't promise anything. And it's really kind of hard to recapture the magic that we had in that interview by trying to recreate it all over again. So I apologize about that. We'll do our best. It's unlikely that we'll get him back on again. And if David and I can get together on Wednesday, perhaps we will. Or if me and Alex can get together, maybe we will. Maybe all three of us. Who knows? But we'll kind of leave that to be determined. You and I will talk again, hopefully what, Saturday morning?
Friday morning.
Friday morning? Okay. Yeah, we'll get together before to recap what happened Thursday night. That sounds good.
Yep, I'll be on the West Coast. I'll be live from Los Angeles. It's Friday morning.
There you go. Folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate, go to SteelersDepot.com. Find that donate button up there in the top of the navigational bar. And, David, we'll talk to you soon.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.